Glad to have all of you who are visiting this morning. We do this every Sunday morning, and we mean it every time we say it, but we do have visitors. Your presence is an encouragement to us. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us. For the last several weeks, we've been engaged in this kind of a study, talking about major lessons from minor epistles. And by minor epistles, we simply mean the short epistles, just as there are things called the minor prophets, which are the writing prophets who didn't write as much as the bigger prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. So there are some minor epistles in the New Testament, and these are the four shortest ones. And we've been looking at some lessons that we can learn from these epistles. Up till now, we've studied from 2 John, and the lessons from 2 John were these, that we can lose our reward, and therefore we need to live a life that will assure us that we will not lose our reward or lose our salvation. We're warned in 2 John about going onward. If I go onward and don't abide in the doctrine of Christ, then I don't have God. And so keeping myself within the parameters of God's will, extremely important. I can't have fellowship, John tells us, with those who teach a doctrine other than the doctrine of Christ. It's a very serious thing to do that, and it's a very serious thing to have fellowship with those who engage in that kind of activity. That was 2 John. In 3 John is built around three individuals. Gaius was a man who was loved by other people. He had a sterling character that made other people love and admire him. Diotrephes, on the other hand, was an individual who loved only himself, and we're warned about being that kind of an individual. And then we read about Demetrius. Not much we read about him, but we do know that he loved that which was good. And because he loved the good, then we are to emulate Demetrius in that sense. In our study last week, we looked at the book of Jude. And of all of the small epistles, this is the one which really has the most meat in it. It's a tremendous little book. And it can probably turn into a quarter study of 13 lessons really easy. Because one of the major things that we read from the book of Jude is that we are to identify what is ungodly and we are to avoid being ungodly people. So many things in the book of Jude that warn us and let us know what ungodliness is in order that we can avoid that. So that 2 and 3 John and Jude. And this morning we're going to turn our attention to the last of these so-called minor epistles and look at some major lessons from the little letter of Philemon. Now, if you are on my Bible studies mail out that I sent out on Saturday, I sent out yesterday, if you've already read that article, then you can get up and leave. You have my permission. Because what we're going to be doing this morning is simply presenting the material this morning that we wrote about in the article yesterday. And so, if you didn't get the material, you're free to stay and engage in the study with us. First lesson, and this is one that we have been stressing throughout this study. The first lesson from Philemon is an obvious one. That minor books and epistles teach some major lessons. And again, I want to make sure I'm not misunderstood. That by minor, we're not talking about the material and the significance of the material, but rather the length of the material. That's what we mean by minor epistles and minor prophets and major epistles. And so, minor books, small books, contain some very, very major lessons. Let's just use Philemon as an example. There are 66 chapters in the book of Isaiah, one of the largest of the major prophets, perhaps the largest. 66 chapters. Commentary after commentary after commentary has been written on Isaiah. Very weighty, very meaty. It is a tremendous piece of literature. Isaiah is talking about the Messiah who was to come, and of course that was Jesus Christ. Isaiah talks about the blessings that people could find in the Messiah once He came and once He set up His rule and established His rule. Men and women who submitted themselves to the Messiah were greatly blessed. And so for centuries, ever since Isaiah was written, probably more commentaries written on Isaiah than any other book in the Bible. Then you come to Philemon. 25 verses. 25 verses as opposed to 66 chapters. And so we take Isaiah and just focus all of our attention on it. And we get to Titus and we flip a page and go to Hebrews. That's not right. Because Philemon tells us how people who are ruled by the Messiah ought to live. Philemon and Isaiah complement one another. Isaiah said, the Messiah is coming. Philemon tells us, He has come, and here's how it has impacted lives. And for that reason, Philemon should not be ignored. And these 25 verses of Philemon are just as important as those big 66 chapters in the book of Isaiah. That's lesson number one. But then there is a second lesson in Philemon. And this is a lesson about first century slavery. Now you may think that this is totally irrelevant, and it's not. Those who would want to tear down the Bible, to destroy our faith and our confidence in it, come to this little letter, along with some other passages in the New Testament, which talk about slavery. There is not one word in Philemon against slavery. But you have Philemon, who was a slave owner, and Onesimus, who was a slave. But Paul does not say one word in this little letter against slavery. He doesn't tell Philemon to get rid of his slaves. Nothing like that. Therefore, God is in favor of slavery. Now that's the conclusion that some people would have us to draw. Now, where do we go to find out the nature of first century slavery? When you think of slavery, what comes to your mind when you think of slavery? What happened in Mississippi, Alabama, all the southern states, back in the decades prior to the Civil War, don't you? Cruel, despotic, horrible white men who took black men and women and children and treated them disgustingly. Inexcusable what happened in slavery in those years prior to the Civil War. And so when we come to the New Testament and we read about slavery, we think 1840s and 1850s southern states in the United States, that must have been what was true in the first century. And we couldn't be more wrong. Now, how do I know that first century slavery was not like the 1800s slavery in this country. Go to Philemon. And let's read verses 1, 4 through 7, and verse 21. When you get a character profile of Philemon, you have to conclude that whatever the slavery was in the first century, it was nothing like the 1800 slavery in this country. Paul addresses this epistle to Philemon, our beloved fellow worker. In verse 4, I thank my God always when I remember you in my prayers, because I hear of your love and of the faith that you have toward the Lord Jesus and for all the saints. And I pray that the sharing of your faith may become effective for the full knowledge of every good thing that is in us for the sake of Christ. For I have derived much joy and comfort from your love, my brother, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you. Then verse 21. He said, confident of your obedience, I write to you, knowing that you will do even more than I say. Could those things that Paul said of Philemon in the first century be said of any slave owner in this country in the 1800s? No. Absolutely not. I know, just from reading those verses, that whatever the slavery was in the first century, it was nothing like the slavery of the 1800s in this country. Someone who takes Philemon and the subject of slavery and tries to degrade God and degrade the Bible and make it appear that God favors the 1800s in this country kind of slavery is either extremely ignorant or extremely prejudiced. And they know better. No. Nothing is said against slavery because it's not the same thing. And besides that, and we'll get into this just more in a moment, here you have a slave and slave owner that were members of the same local congregation in Colossae. You think you could go back into the historical records of this country and find any local church of Christ in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, wherever, and find a slave and a slave owner that were members of the same congregation? I don't think so. And yet, that's what you had in the case of Onesimus and Philemon. And so, there is no ground for accusing God or accusing the Bible for favoring slavery when that's simply not a fair treatment of Philemon's letter. There's another lesson from Philemon. And that's a lesson in local church relationships. I said a moment ago, you go to the book of Colossians, and a lot of times we ignore the book of Colossians when studying the book of Philemon, and yet they complement one another because they were all written at the same time. Here you had in the church in Colossae a slave owner who was a member of the congregation, and his slave was a member of the same local church. Now, isn't that a setup for a great relationship in a local church? A slave and a slave owner, members of the same congregation? Can you imagine the potential for tension and for problems here? You had an obvious disparity in social standing. Here was a slave owner. Whatever was involved in that, and I don't know what all was involved in being a slave owner in the first century in the Roman Empire. Don't know. I just know it wasn't like what it was here in 1800s. But you had a man who had some social standing and some economic ability because he owned slaves. And one of those slaves was a member of the same local church. All kinds of potential for problems there. And yet there weren't. Onesimus was a part of the church in Colossae, even though he had a criminal past. Now, what he had done, when you read the book of the letter to Philemon, Onesimus had stolen something from Philemon and then had complicated things by running away, both of which were illegal. Paul sends him back, and now he has this on his record, on his rap sheet. Onesimus is a criminal, or at least a former one. He had a record. It was a record of being a thief, a record of running away, breaking Roman law. And yet, both of these men are members of the same church. Look in verse 11 and in verse 16. In spite of that, in spite of the socioeconomic disparity, in spite of the fact that Philemon had this, or Onesimus rather, had this past, Paul says in verse 11, formerly he was useless to you, that is, Onesimus. Formerly he was useless to you, but now he is indeed useful to you and to me. And then down in verse 16, he's no longer a bondservant, but more than a bondservant, a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. Onesimus comes to Colossae. He and his slave owner are members of the same congregation, and yet they're to work together perfectly. You talk about unity and diversity? You have it here. If Onesimus and Philemon could get along under these circumstances, if the church at Colossae could accept Onesimus with his past, shouldn't we be able, in spite of our diversities of background, diversities of economic standing, of social standing, shouldn't we be able, in spite of those differences and diversities, to work together? Now, as I said in my article based upon this, there's one thing, though, that's true. You know that Onesimus could never, ever be qualified to serve as an elder in Colossae. You know that? With his past? Can you imagine the business meeting? When we're talking about having elders and somebody brings up the name of Onesimus and the fun they could have with that? I'm saying that sarcastically. In spite of Onesimus's past, he could have served as an elder, all other things being equal, and then carrying that a step further, and I would love to know if this ever took place. Can you imagine Onesimus and Philemon serving as elders together? Wouldn't that have been a great thing to know about? We ought to be able to get along better than we do sometimes. And one of the lessons from Philemon is, in spite of backgrounds, in spite of differences, we can work together. Another lesson from Philemon. And this is a lesson on getting involved. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 26. Paul compared here the body of Christ to a human body. And he said, if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Paul became aware, when he met Onesimus, he became aware of the fact that he had run away from a slave owner named Philemon. The easy thing for Paul to have done was just leave that thing alone. I might convert Onesimus, and he's a Christian now, but I'm not going to get involved in this thing. He's a runaway slave. He's broken the law and all. I'm just not going to get involved in that. Paul jumped into the middle of it with both feet. There are some times in the body of Christ when you become aware, I become aware of a problem between two people. It's touchy. It's sensitive. What do I do? Just act like I don't know about it. That's the easy way out. Just hands off, I don't want anything to do with that. Paul could have done that here and just left this Onesimus Philemon problem alone. But he didn't. And the message not only of Philemon but of other passages is the same thing. If there's problems in the body and I'm aware of it, I need to get involved in it. Titus chapter 2 verses 3 and 4. What are older women to do in reference to younger women? They are to teach them. That means getting involved in their lives. That means talking with them. That means training them. That means, in some cases, saying, that's really not the appropriate thing to do. This is the more appropriate thing to do. That's totally scriptural. And it's badly needed. In Galatians chapter 6, beginning with verse 1, if any man is overtaken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, do what? Restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering thyself also, lest you also be tempted. Somebody's overtaken in a wrong, they've committed a sin, or perhaps their life is headed in that direction. What do you do? Just to think, boy, that's a hot potato. I'm just not going to touch that thing. That could open up all kind of problems. Spiritually minded men do the opposite, according to Galatians 6. Those that are spiritually minded get involved. And they seek to restore such a one. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 20. We talked about it in our class this morning. Even elders. Paul said in 1 Timothy 5, 20, even elders who sin are to be possibly rebuked publicly. That's getting involved. And Peter found out that you can't discriminate on the basis of race without incurring the wrath of the Apostle Paul. And Paul rebuked him publicly for that. Let me urge all of you, and I'm talking about myself also. If somebody ever comes to you, and we'll talk more about this in just a second. If somebody comes to you, and they want to talk to you about your lifestyle. They want to talk to you about what you're not doing that you should be doing or what you are doing that you should not be doing. Please, don't tell that person or think, what in the world you think you're doing? Get out of my life. Mind your own business. Let me tell you something. They are minding their business. And the way you live is their business. And the way I live is your business. And if we were more involved in one another's lives in this way and trying to help one another, how much better would we be and how much more growth would take place? Now, along with that, here's another lesson. Those of you that want to get involved in the lives of other people, okay. But Philemon is an excellent study in proper approaches. When I determine that I'm going to go to someone and talk to them and try to get them to quit doing the wrong and start doing right and all of that, what do I do? Read Philemon. First of all, read Philemon. And learn here that when Paul wanted Philemon to pursue a particular course of action, in this case taking his slave back, Paul began by pointing out all of Philemon's positive qualities. You're this man. You're this kind of guy. All of these things we read a moment ago. You're such a great, great man. Paul was not flattering Philemon. That was not at all. He was laying a foundation. He was saying, based upon the kind of man I know you to be, a good man, an honest man, a loving man, a faithful man, based upon that, here's what you need to do. Isn't that much better than going to some person and leaving the impression with, I'll tell you what, you're not worth much. And I don't expect much out of you, but here I am. Can you imagine? Or trying to force somebody to do what's right? Paul's approach was expecting the very best out of Philemon. Paul wanted Philemon's response and obedience to be willful, not something that he didn't really want to do. And Paul used this, and I think he was totally right. Paul said, I appeal to you as one who is Paul the aged. Do you have the right to approach somebody on the basis of, and you have to be careful how you do this, I understand, on the basis of, I'm a little bit older than you are. I've lived a little bit longer. I've seen things that you haven't seen. I've experienced things you haven't experienced. And based upon the years that I've lived and the experiences that I've had, what you're about to do is a disaster. That's why Paul back there in Titus 2 said the older women are to teach the younger women. Because of their age, they are inherently, potentially, much wiser. Philemon teaches me that that's a proper approach to take. Philemon teaches me, we've touched upon this somewhat in a previous point, that socioeconomic status should be irrelevant among Christians. Romans chapter 12, verse 16, associate with the lowly. Is there a tendency for us in a congregation of some size to sort of gravitate toward the ones who have the most money, have the most prestige? They've got things that really materially are better. And then here's somebody down here that they're just barely making it. We're not going to make friends with them. We're not going to get involved with them because, you know, what do they have to offer me? Now, we wouldn't say that. But sometimes that's how we act in direct opposition to this statement by Paul in Romans 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 23, the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. Find somebody who has no economic status, no social status, nothing materially to offer. Gravitate toward them. Make friends with them. Go out to eat with them. Invite them to your house. We're all members of the same body. And these distinctions that we make are totally, totally wrong. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 9. It was Jesus who reached out to fishermen to become His apostles. Acts chapter 22 and verse 3. Paul was educated by Gamaliel. He was a doctor of theology in our terminology today. And yet, in Acts 18, this doctor of theology who had had this great theological training could associate with tent makers, Priscilla and Aquila, and work with them. In Ephesians chapter 2, the word fellow appears over and over there in those two verses. All of us are fellows. We're partners. We're sharers. It makes no difference if you have nothing economically. It makes no difference what your ethnic background is. It makes no difference what your social standing is. You're my fellow. You're my partner. You're my sharer. And upon that basis, we have to live. Finally, Philemon teaches about the providence of God. verse 15 and verse 22 of Philemon. Paul said, for perhaps, talking about Onesimus as being separated from Philemon, for perhaps he was separated from you to bring about this result. And then he said, I hope I will be given to you. Paul talking about Philemon. I'll return to you. Perhaps I will be given to you. That is the same thing that Mordecai said in Esther chapter 4 and verse 14 and talking to Esther and said, who knows that you have not come to the position that you are for such a time as this? Paul believed in the providence of God, even though he probably couldn't explain it any more than I could. Paul believed it. And whenever bad things happen in my life, and it looks like the very worst things are taking place in my life, why not go back to Philemon and say, perhaps, maybe God is doing something. I don't understand it. I don't like it. But perhaps it'll turn out to be okay. This was Joseph's philosophy. Genesis chapter 50 and verse 20. When he was talking to his brothers that he'd been estranged from, and once he'd been reunited because they had sold him into Egyptian slavery, Joseph said, God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result. And that's exactly what is being said in Philemon in those two verses. Philemon will cause you to believe in the providence of God. So much in Philemon, from him, from Onesimus, from the church at Colossae, from Paul himself. So many lessons to learn. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 17, Paul said, brethren, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern that you have in us. I submit to you, Philemon, Onesimus, Paul, the church at Colossae, John, all of the men that we've talked about in these minor epistles, there are major lessons. And lessons that are so practical. And we'd be better people. We'd be much better off as individuals and as a congregation by taking these lessons to heart and making an application of them in our lives. Thank you so much.